since April of 1985. This is the DX Audio Service, a nonprofit organization devoted to the radio listening hobby. New Year. This is the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for January 2001. This is issue number 190, and this is Fred Volby, the publisher of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. You can contact me at area code 419-228-4199 or fax 419-221-1609. If you're on the internet, you can email me at fredv@nrcdxas.org. That's FREDV at nrcdxas.org. On the web, we're appropriately at www.nrcdxas.org. If you'd like to become a member of the DX Audio Service and live in the United States of America, the cost is $25. To members in Canada, the subscription rate is $28. To Mexico and the Caribbean, it's $32. And to Europe and elsewhere, it's $38. Those prices are also the renewal rates. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep the cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me here at the DX Audio Service. Well, we got a fully packed edition of the DX Audio Service, so let's jump right in with the AM Switch.
This is the AM Switch. To contribute to this column, send your information to Jerry Starr, care of WHOT Radio, 4040 Simon Road, Youngstown, Ohio, 44512. Now, here's Jerry Starr.
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr with another edition of AM Switch from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News Magazine. We start our first column for the new millennium with call letter changes under reference number 493, two changes on 1330 WASA in Havre de Grace, Maryland, changes to WJSS, and on 1510 KIKA, Ontario, California, becomes KMXN. Under applications for existing facilities, a number of stations wanting to change their city of license on 550 WKNJ, Lakeside, New Jersey. This is a construction permit for a new station that has never been put on the air. They would like to move that construction permit to the city of Harriman, New York. 700 KMJY, Newport, Washington, would like to move to Airway Heights, Washington. 910 KXEB, Sherman, Texas, wants to go to Frisco, Texas. On 1020 KYXE, Sulla, Washington, wants to move to Union Gap, Washington. 1190 WJES in Johnston, South Carolina, would like to move their city of license to Saluda, South Carolina. 1360 WWLG in Baltimore, Maryland, they would like to change their city of license to Pikesville, Maryland, and at the same time change frequency to 1370 kilohertz. 1470 WSRO, Marlboro, Massachusetts, wants to move to Watertown, Massachusetts. On 1470 WFJY in Portage, Pennsylvania, wants to change their frequency to 660 kHz and their city of license to Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania. Wilkinsburg is a suburb of Pittsburgh. Portage is a suburb of Johnstown. This would be a move of over 75 miles. Several grants of interest on 1170 CKGY Red Deer, Alberta will be moving to 95.5 FM. And on 1200 WKOX in Framingham, Massachusetts will officially change its city of license to Newton, Massachusetts. On 1200 WQLS in Ozark, Alabama, this station was reported in all the trade papers to have moved to 1210 kHz, and we reported that about a year or so ago here on AM Switch. It turns out the WQLS never moved. They're still on 1200. Local monitoring confirms that they're still there. So if you have a written log, change the station back to 1200 kHz with 10,000 watts non-directional daytime only. Moving on to reference number 494, two call letter changes on 950 WEZO in Rochester, New York, brings back an old Rochester call, WBBF. And on 1220, that new station in Cornwall, Ontario, will be CJUL. They'll call it the Jewel. Two applications for new stations in this one on 680 in San Juan, Puerto Rico for 400 watts daytime, 2,000 watts nighttime. This will be a synchronous transmitter for WAPA, if granted. And on 1490, a new station requested in Lebanon, New Hampshire, 600 watts day and night, a non-directional antenna. That competes with another application tendered several weeks ago for the same frequency in Lebanon. Several applications of interest as more stations continue to want to move their city of license on 1050. WJXY Conway, South Carolina wants to move to Charleston, South Carolina. 1090 WCAR Livonia, Michigan wants to change their city of license to Melvindale, Michigan. On 1120 KLIM in Lyman, Colorado wants to move their city of license almost 100 miles down I-25 to Security, Colorado, which is near Colorado Springs. 1200 WKDA Lebanon, Tennessee wants to move their city of license to Nashville, Tennessee. 1340 KEBC Oklahoma City wants to move to Midwest City, Oklahoma. 1380 KMUL in Mule Shoe, Texas, they want to go to Farwell, Texas. On 1520, WDMN in Toledo, Ohio would like to move to Rossford, Ohio. And on 1600, WKBJ Milan, Tennessee wants to move to Lakeland, Tennessee. A couple otherness items of interest on 960 KOVO Provo, Utah. This station reported as silent. And on 1340 KTMP in Heber City, Utah, the license for this station was canceled by the FCC back in March of 1999. However, the station has successfully petitioned the FCC to reconsider this decision, so the license and call sign have been reinstated. So write into your log on 1340 KTMP, Heber City, Utah, with 1,000 watts day and night and a non-directional antenna. Reference number 495 has these call changes. 540 WZER Jackson, Wisconsin changes to WYLO. On 730 WLIM Lenore City, Tennessee goes to WKZX. 840 WCTG in Columbia, South Carolina changes to WCEO. 910 WYLI Marietta, Ohio goes back to a former call, WBRJ. 970 KAFY Bakersfield, California becomes KZPM. 1020 KCKN in Roswell, New Mexico changes to KXEM, but don't write that in your log yet because that change will only last about a week. We'll tell you that when we get to number 496. 1050 WJXY Conway, South Carolina changing to WIQB. 1100 KZPM Bakersfield, California becomes KAFY. There's the other half of that swap. On 1270, WLSM in Louisville, Mississippi becomes WIRL, and I believe in Mississippi it is pronounced Louisville, not Louisville. You can correct me on that if I'm wrong. On 1290, WIRL, Peoria, Illinois becomes WWFS. Several applications of interest on 600 CKCL, Tiro, Nova Scotia will move to 99.5 FM if approved. And on 1540, WSIV in East Syracuse, New York would like to change their city of license to DeWitt, New York. In otherness, on 1220 CJUL in Cornwall, Ontario, this new station is now on the air. 1520 WTRI Brunswick, Maryland, once again silent. And on 1570 WGLL Auburn, Indiana, also silent. Finally, in addition number 496, these call changes. On 670 WRJR Clearmont, Virginia becomes WHRP. 860 WTEL in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania goes back to WWDB. On 1010, WCKW, Garyville, Louisiana becomes WLTS. 1020, KXEM in Roswell, New Mexico. Well, they never really used this call. They are now KINF. 1040, WZSK in Everett, Pennsylvania. That call change was set aside. The station remains WSKE. 1110, KRLA, Pasadena, California becomes KSPN. 1160, WYRU, Red Springs, North Carolina once again becomes the repository of the WTEL call. We have no clue why they keep switching these calls back and forth. 1320, KWHN, Fort Smith, Arkansas becomes KYHN. 1340, KFEZ, Kansas City, Kansas makes it official. They are now KCKN. 1390 KCRC Enid, Oklahoma becomes KMMZ. 1430 WMAK Madison, Tennessee changing to WQCQ. 1480 KJIN in Houma, Louisiana, down near the river where they can have K or W calls, will be changing to WFXY. On 1590, WETT Ocean City, Maryland becomes WKHZ. 1600 WOHZ Wheeling, West Virginia becoming WKKX. 1640 KMMZ in Enid, Oklahoma. The call that moved down to their traditional band station is now going to be KMKZ. And on 1650 KHFS, Fort Smith, Arkansas, takes up the old traditional band call of KWHN. Some applications of interest on 750 CKGB in Timmins, Ontario, wants to move to 99.3 FM. 920 CJCJ Woodstock, New Brunswick, wants to go to 104.1 FM. 1190 WBIS in Annapolis, Maryland, would like to change their city of license to Highland Beach, Maryland. 1240 CJNH Bancroft, Ontario, would like to go to 99.7 FM. And on 1550 WDLR in Delaware, Ohio, wants to change their city of license to Westerville, Ohio. And finally, three otherness items to wrap it up on 1150 WCEN, Mount Pleasant, Michigan, is silent. 1280 KLDY, Lacey, Washington, this silent station has returned to the air. And on 1610 KALT, the new X-band station in Atlanta, Texas, is expected to begin their testing probably by the time this tape reaches you. That's it for now. We'll see you next month with more stuff from the broadcast band. Right now, let's see how the new millennium is treating John Bowker.
Well, thanks once again, Jerry.
And hello, everybody. I sure hope you had a good holiday season. As we settle down into the dull routine of a brand new year, let's make this a good one, too. And just think, it won't be too long before we're saying things like, remember the way things were back in 01? or are they going to call it 01, the way they did in the 1900s? This is the travelogue portion of the audio service, and today we're going to be hearing from stations operating at 600 on the dial, as we did last month. But these are going to be operating with K as the first letter of their call sign. And we're going to start in the state of Texas as we begin the January 2001 DX Audio Service travelogue.
Westwood One Radio Networks.
Everyone, Bill Coates inviting you to join me tomorrow morning and each weekday morning on the Morning Magazine. We cover sports, everything from the Cowboys to Cujo, from the Rangers to the Wildcat.
AM 600,
and good afternoon with KTBB News. I'm Larry Brooks.
Okay, Larry, and if you were to drive something over 700 miles west from Tyler...
Joe! Stay where you are. The gripe line continues.
One-on-one sports.
This is one-on-one sports on Team 600 KROD, El Paso's best talk.
This is Sports Health Today with former NBA All-Star Mark Eaton.
You get your body fat measured and the results tell you that you are obese.
Hey, man, I don't need that. And while we're out in the western stretches of Texas, less than a dozen miles from the southeast corner of New Mexico, we find another very rural community with a radio station.
From the beautiful Rio Grande Valley in South Texas, you're listening to KUBR San Juan, KERB Kermit, La Cadena Radio Cristiana, Christian Radio Network.
And by the way, we were listening to KERB in Kermit, Texas. That's the one. Well, now, let's see. It was just last month we were pointing out that these signals at the low end of the dial really get around. So the point is that particularly at the 500s and 600s, these stations can cover an enormous amount of territory with only 5,000 watts. So it shouldn't surprise us to find entire states without any kind of station at 600 or some of these other frequencies, too. And if you go north out of Texas, you come to Oklahoma, and these signals get out so well that there are no 600 stations in Oklahoma. There are none in the next states that we come to either as we go north. None in Kansas, Nebraska, or even in South Dakota. It isn't until we reach Jamestown in North Dakota that our radio comes alive with signals at 600 kilohertz.
The Nashville Record Review on KSJB, Jamestown.
Here's the latest from ABC News. Remember the song Slip Sliding Away? Probably not a good idea to mention it to anybody coming back from Woodstock, though. ABC's Larry Jacobs is with us live from Saugerties.
Okay, Saugerties, New York. Oh, boy. That's where Linda and I spent our first night on the road the day we retired from our life's work just 13 years ago. But wait, we're way the heckin' gone out in the northern plains. We aren't in Saugerties, New York. So let's continue our westerly swing. We might as well take a peek at Glacier National Park while we're out that way and camp overnight in the biggest of the communities in that area around Glacier.
Since 1927, this is the Classic 600 KGEZ in Kalispell. It's 1 o'clock at news time, brought to you by the LA Connection.
Now, this next station's operation is more like one I got used to at one of the stations I played in for a couple of years. Listen to what happens when he goes into the news.
60 Kicks is KIIX, Wellington, Fort Collins.
What do you think of that? That's called bringing up the satellite when there's no satellite signal to be brought up. What an empty feeling. I know that feeling very well. Anyway, that was Wellington, Colorado, some years ago. And let's see, Mark Durenberger brought us up to date right there in Wellington just recently.
Paul Harvey.
News and comments.
Live every weekday morning at 9:35.
Good day.
Right here on News Radio 600. KCOL Wellington.
Fort Collins.
Loveland.
Greeley.
11 o'clock, Ken. Currently our temperature warming up. Looking for a high near 70. We're 55 out of doors. Rich Burcombe Shaw, the News Radio 600 KCOL Newsroom. Big boost for George W. Bush this morning, former GOP presidential rival.
We're going to move to the south and to the west just a little bit and find ourselves in the high plains of Arizona. If that isn't a winner, I don't know. If you listened very closely, you heard KCLS sung by the gals. And that ID was recorded by another Mark. That's Mark Strickert, back in the 1950s, he tells me. However, by the time Linda and I got out that way to Flagstaff, Arizona, with radios and buttons and knobs, is that what they said? Not buttons and bows. Anyway, we had our radios and recorders in 1994, all poised there in the highlands. And that station had changed its story and, of course, its call letters, too.
Until tomorrow, Northern Arizona, the pleasure has been all mine. So long, everyone.
This is KVNA, Flagstaff, AM 600, the talk of Northern Arizona.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Bob Schmidt. May be almost over near Jordan, Montana after 81 days.
Oh, boy. Let's go back to the mid-1980s.
The new KLZ San Diego, Class AM.
And if we update that by about a decade,
the new Q106, KKLQ AM and FM San Diego. A better mix of music and more of it. Now.
That was a real positive sounding station break. So let's give them one more break since they're such an upbeat station.
Serving America's finest city from a dumpy little building in Kearney Mesa. KKLQ.
I should have quit while I was ahead.
San Diego, the new Q106.
And if you go out that way these days, here's what you hear.
The entertainment and revenue-generating portion of the broadcast day, the Imus in the Morning program, will resume tomorrow morning.
All talk, all the time.
K-O-G-O, San Diego.
Coco, AM 600.
A service of far broadcasting. From the Coco.
Fogo News Center, here's the 9 a.m. report. Good morning, I'm Pete Muller, and here's what's happening. The shuttle Columbia has leaped into space on what could be a record-setting mission.
Oh, dear boy.
It's 1 o'clock. K6O is KSXO Reading. Dave Camper hanging out. Your sister Sledge, and we are family.
That recording was made from inside a rather cavernous shopping center one Sunday evening. It was still under construction, I remember, there in Reading. And I also remember not one single ATM machine was working. And our return trip in 1994 was much more satisfactory.
KNR AM 600. Try us for a change and challenge your mind. KNR with Jerry Brown and We the People. KNRO Reading. Thundering across Northern California. Power News 600 KNR.
NBC Radio News.
You know, now we're going to get to that confusing part of the country where everything is called Vancouver. Let's see. Now, we've heard of Portland, Oregon. That's right on the Columbia River at the northern border of Oregon, of course. And there's a bridge on Interstate 5, takes you right across the river, and when you do that, you're in the state of Washington. And right there, you're in the city of Vancouver, Washington. So we'll listen to this ID first.
It's great, so great to be in the country. C-J-O-R, Vancouver.
Okay, that's all we have, but that's Vancouver, Washington. So if you're clear on that, now we'll travel all the way north through the state of Washington, way up north of Seattle and Bellingham and all that, on into Canada, and we drive for about an hour and a half, and we come to the city of Vancouver.
Canada's first contemporary Christian music station is CKBD, Vancouver, 600 AM, The Bridge.
I think you got that straight now about Vancouver. So there's one more. It's an island off to the west, out northwest of Seattle even. And Vancouver Island is where the capital of British Columbia is, a city called Victoria. Okay, we're going to be turning our back on all of that, moving 1,000 miles to the east into Saskatchewan.
CFQC, Saskatoon Radio, just you and me in Mexico. This is Edward Bear.
Now, that ID dates back to the 1980s, and if you were in Saskatoon today, you'd hear something more like this.
The 7 o'clock report from Saskatchewan's number one news source, CJWW Saskatoon.
Good morning, I'm Sharon Van Howie. It's 14 degrees in Saskatoon.
CJWW Saskatoon.
Okay, we take another large jump across the beautiful Canadian landscape, and it brings us to the second largest French-speaking city in the entire world.
Canada's first radio station, CFCF 600, Radio Montreal.
Magic memories, CFCF 600, Radio Montreal.
Do you remember this jingle from about 10 years ago on the travelogue?
Yeah.
Here's what Mark Strickert got for us just recently in the province of Quebec.
CIQC, Talk Radio 600, Montreal.
Country 600.
From Broadcast News, I'm Bill Draper.
Well, we're back just about where we started from in the Great Northeast, and that means we're ready to start in again next month. In fact, it'll be at 6:10 on the dial, and that means, of course, we'll be starting in New Hampshire. Same time, different stations. By the way, meantime, if you want to reach me, my mailing address is 1811 Fort Duquesne Drive, DUQUESNE, Fort Duquesne Drive, and that's in Sun City Center, Florida, 33573. You can use email. I'm at wa2wen@juno.com. So I'll see you next month. Right now, I'm going to hand the microphone over to Bruce Conti for the DX Digest. Bruce?
Let's do it.
There's nothing wrong with your set. It's just that foreign station on 891. This is the DX Audio Service.
Hello, DXers. I'm Bruce Conti, and this is the DX Digest. Another successful Newfoundland Canada DX expedition has come and gone. Mark Conley was among those who converged on the sleepy village of Capahaden, fishing for distant medium-wave signals from four continents via an impressive arsenal of equipment and antennas. I caught up with Mark after the DX expedition to capture some of his thoughts. Here's Mark Conley with Reflections from Newfoundland.
This is my fifth. I went in 1991, 93, 95, 98, and then this year, 2000. And I had a good time. There were three other DXs there while I was there. Jim Renfrew, the NRC IDXD editor, was on the premises. Jean Brunel, the local, the host as always, setting up all the arrangements for the DX in. And Neil Kazaros from Illinois. He used to be in New England and has quite a great record of foreign DXing over the years, especially when he was in Ogunquit, Maine, and also Narragansett, Rhode Island, so he knows his way around the dial when it comes to overseas stations. So that was the complement of DXs, and I was there for roughly 3 days. There were four receiving positions. Jean Brunel's position had two receivers, a Drake R8A and the ICOM R71. And Neil had his AOR 7030 with him. I brought my Drake R8A, and Jim Renfrew had a Drake R8. So that was the complement of receivers, and there were a number of phasing units on the premises. The antennas were all brought in through ICE splitters, so we had three antennas available to everybody at the same time, which worked out real well. One of the antennas is the 1 kilometer long Brazil Beverage, which is an extremely effective and narrow beam width antenna pointed towards the eastern end of South America. It was mostly Neil and Jim Renfrew who were working that antenna and logged quite a few Brazilians, Argentinians, stations from Uruguay. And also the antenna worked reasonably well to Africa at times as well. Another antenna running in a southerly direction is a roughly half kilometer long antenna that was terminated with a Bion remote termination system. That was set up more to capture African stations that might be a little bit too far east to be in the beam width of the Brazil antenna. And because the antenna is at a right angle to Europe, it eliminated a lot of the interference from Spain and the other European stations. And the third important antenna was the Beverage towards Europe, also around 500 meters in length. And that was certainly a workhorse for me because I was more interested in listening to the European stations in the Middle East and some of the Africans also. There was also a K9AY system that was primarily in use by Jean Brunel. And the beam width on that is somewhat wider. It still has a nice cardioid pattern to reject anything coming from the west, primarily the other U.S. and Canadian stations all off the back of the antennas. And at times that picked up a bit more noise than the Beverages did, since the Beverages had external noise-reducing transformers located at some distance outside of the house. But it was still a useful antenna for him. During the daytime, we only really have one meal outside a day, since we want to spend a lot of the time at the radio. So typically around noon or a bit after that, we take a ride down to a place in Trapassi and have a nice seafood dinner. And the guys get to talk about all of their interests, radio, of course, among them, but music gets into the act as one of the interests, and sometimes world cultures, different foods, lots of other things that you would expect from people that have an interest in the world at large. So it's a great time, and people talk about their families, jobs, and the whole thing. So it's not just, you know, nerdy radio discussions all the time. Up there, you hear many stations from the Baltic area and into Russia, and those stations typically don't have the same carry to get down into the New England area. Those stations lose a lot of strength because of how they position themselves near the auroral oval. So I might be getting, you know, S9 plus signals out of Latvia or Russia or Poland or somewhere like that, and I know that those stations generally don't have that much of a chance of making it down here. But if I'm hearing stations from Libya, let's say on 972, I pick that station up there and then manage subsequently to hear it down here. It's a station that's either upped its power or just come on the air, and that has a pretty good signal down here when I heard it. And I also look for some of the off-frequency stations. Sometimes you'll get a few of the stations that are on the old planned channels, which are 1 kilohertz lower than the current channels, or you'll just get stations that have drifted. There was a Syrian station on 831.5. Normally the frequency for their band plan is 828, so he was 3.5 kilohertz high of what it was supposed to be. So that sort of errant frequency station is something I look for, because, you know, they have somewhat more of a chance of getting through because they're removed from the other interference on the channel, and sometimes they're also removed from any of the domestic channels. And certainly stations in around the eastern end of the Mediterranean do have the likelihood of reaching the shore sites in New England on a fairly regular basis. So I looked at what was coming in from Turkey and from Egypt, and anything over in the Middle East. I had a pretty good signal out of UAE on 1476, which I've also heard in Rockport, Massachusetts, and picked up an Iranian on 1539.07. Now the one that we get here most often is 1503, so I'm going to try for that one. I think that has a somewhat of a possibility of coming in. I looked at the Africans. I had a pretty good Botswana on 909, parallel to the VOA Sao Tome station on 1530. I think if it's auroral some night, I might have a shot at that. What might be a good indicator is right next to it on 907.8 Gambia, which is one that we can get here occasionally. So if I got a reasonably good signal out of that, and let's say the European stations are reduced by the aurora, then I can work an African opening and possibly look for that Botswana station. And South Africa on 846 is another one I've had tentatively from a receiving site down here in the Duxbury area. So I'm just going to keep working on that one. It's a bit tough here with 850 in Boston to pull 846, anything other than Italy, on that channel, but I'm going to keep trying for a South African on some channel. I know Jean happened to hit an aurora just before the de-expedition and bagged several South Africans, so those stations do have at least a slim possibility of making it to New England, certainly better than some of the northern Russian stations do, although in a quiet year like 1996, Russian stations were heard, and Finland on 963 was heard, Faroe Islands on 531, so northern stations aren't totally out of the game. They're just a lot less frequently heard than Africans and southwestern Europeans and the Mediterranean area. Those tend to be the hot spots coming into the shore sites in eastern Massachusetts. Newfoundland gives you a little more breadth and depth of DX. You're just closer to the action, first of all, and you have a lot fewer domestics to fight off, so that certainly gives you the targets to look for. You know, some of those targets will be found eventually, and many of them won't be, but it's always a lot of fun to see what might be heard just by glimpsing a little farther over the horizon by going up there, versus just if you stayed at home, you wouldn't really know what might be coming next, but at least this way you have a clue. A successful de-expedition and a whole lot of fun.
Mark Connolly with reflections from the Newfoundland de-expedition. Watch for the complete report from Jean Brunel soon in the NRC's DX News magazine and on the internet. Visit Mark's internet homepage, members.aol.com/markwaion/weblink.htm, for links to reports from this and past Newfoundland de-expeditions. More next time on the DX Digest. I'm Bruce Conti, 73 and good DX.
This is Mark Dernberger on the road again, and this time we're in Lexington, Nebraska, the home of KRVN 50,000 watts on 880. And we're just approaching this four-tower directional array in a cornfield, and we're about to meet with Gary Rice, transmitter engineer, who will give us a tour of this plant.
It's all owned by farmers and ranchers. It was started that way in the early 50s. They went on the air February 1st of 1951. And today,
on 1010.
On 1010 at 25 kilowatt. It's a cooperative. You pay $10 to join, but you never get any dividends back. The only thing you get is a free meal at the Vets Club every year. And they elect a board of directors.
At the annual meeting.
Yeah, at the annual meeting. And they elect a board of directors. And the profits, because it's a Type S corporation, the profits have to be plowed right back into the, because it pays no dividends, it has to be plowed right back into the operation.
When did you go 50,000 watts on 80?
In 1968 is when they started construction, and they had originally started at 1010 with 25 kilowatts, so that transmitter had only ran half power all of its life. It was a daytime only, and obviously they could double the power and increase the coverage area, and that's, you know, and that's what they wanted.
KRVN is one of the stations that ended up on a clear channel frequency. Originally, WCBS was alone on 880, I believe.
Yeah, WCBS was a clear channel, and then in the early to mid-60s, the government started allowing, the FCC started allowing stations, but the station who occupied that frequency got to determine what the protection null had to be, et cetera, et cetera.
And the clear channel proceeding, the whole idea was to provide some wide area service to the western part of the United States. And so the allocations that were made, I think, in fact, Nebraska is about the farthest east. Most of them were in the far west states.
Yeah, that's correct.
So Nebraska got 880, and you weren't the only applicant, I take it. Right?
No. There was another station in Grand Island, KMMJ, and they had the original, had originally won the fight for the 880 allocation, but WCBS didn't think that they could deliver the null protection that they demanded with a three-tower array, so that threw it back open again. KRVN went in with a four-tower array, quarter-wave tower array, and WCBS bought that, and KRVN ended up with the allocation after spending a lot of lawyer fees.
So at night, at local sunset, you're required to switch, and it's not a question of just sending the signal west, but the main reason you're doing it is to protect the WCBS signal to the east, right?
Yeah, that's right. If you look down on top of the towers and could see the RF, it would be basically a heart-shaped pattern without the point at the bottom. It would just be a very blunt. And under the original rules, we had to maintain a zero null off 81 degrees, and if 81 degrees takes you right through New York City and obviously protecting WCBS.
What do you mean by zero null?
We are allowed virtually no signal in that heading.
From the east of the towers?
Right. And that was commonly called a critical array. There's very few of them in the United States. But now they have changed the rules again, and we're under the process of getting rid of our critical array designation and going to a standard type array, and we're in the process of that. We have a construction permit right now with permission to operate at vary the parameters.
And the idea is to be able to let the signal out a little?
Yeah,
a little
we're going to let a little bit more RF back to the east and hopefully serve our customers and listeners in that area. As I mentioned, this whole operation is owned by farmers and ranchers, and we have a lot of listeners to the east, clear back to the Missouri River and beyond, but unfortunately at night, we go away.
You can hear this thing on the west coast.
Well, yeah, when you're pumping 50 kilowatt
to
Malibu Beach, yeah, we've gotten signal reports from Hawaii, Australia, New Zealand. You want to go back to the
phasing room? Now, we're standing in a room that is populated by a lot of big coils that are anywhere from a foot and a half to 3 feet long and two, maybe foot and a half in diameter.
Yeah, about right.
And they're made out of tubing?
Yeah, silver-plated copper tubing. Those are the coils, and of course the large vacuum and ceramic capacitors are for towers 2 and 3. Most of the power goes into towers 2 and 3. Towers 1 and 4, that's why those components are smaller. Those are ribbon wire inductors and obviously smaller glass vacuum capacitors. But because of the amount of power that's being run into towers 2 and 3, that's why those components are larger than the other components.
So this wall I'm looking at actually alters the electrical signal, the time it's delayed in the time it takes to get to each tower. And then in combination, the different towers are fed electrically slightly different. And the combination together makes this whole thing act kind of like a column loudspeaker, doesn't it? It forces the energy in one direction.
Yeah, that's correct. And if you set up two towers, quarter wave towers, and set them half wave length apart, you come up with and split the power evenly, you come up with a certain type of pattern. And if you feed them quarter wave length apart in spacing, they will have the opposite pattern.
On 880, a quarter wavelength is how many feet?
It's about 300.
Those towers out there are about 300 feet high.
They're about 311 feet, actually. And you'll see if you go out in the tower houses, which we can go out a little bit later, you'll see the same basic components in there. But those components out there in the tower houses have no effect on pattern operation. That's strictly an antenna matching operation.
They're called what, antenna tuning units?
Yeah,
or
to use antenna tuning units, and that's to match from 50 ohms up to whatever the base impedance of the particular tower requires. And of course, the more towers you mix in, the more they affect each other, so you'll get some pretty squirrely mutual impedances.
And the whole thing is a mathematical formula that if I walked over here now and started to turn one of these adjustments, I could make the signal move literally in a different direction.
And it doesn't take very much movement, very much component movement. Just standing here, you can see the change on the antenna monitor, just your body capacitance alone. So whenever we adjust this, then we step out of the room. This is a copper screen enclosed room, and if you adjust anything, then you have to step back out and let it settle, because your body capacitance alone will be enough to mess things up.
Now, this is always fun, and for those of you who are sighted, you have probably seen this trick with a fluorescent light bulb, holding it near something generating a lot of RF.
Yeah.
You won't have to get very close, I bet.
No. The kids that come out here, they really opens their eyes. A standard burned out 4-foot fluorescent tube, and you just bring it up next to the right now, daytime array, we're feeding tower 3. Just bring it up to the tower 3 components, and as you can see, it's fully lit while I'm holding it in my hand. The kids get a big bang out of that. Okay, we'll go back in the bomb shelter. These are 24-inch thick concrete reinforced walls with the same ceiling. And you notice it's kind of an L dog leg coming in here, and there's an outside door that's the same way.
Yeah.
Now, this is for radiation travels in straight lines only. And you notice, come back here, we've got dried beans and popcorn and instant potatoes and peanut butter. And you're supposed to be able to live back here, at least under the old EBS rules. You're supposed to be able to live back here for 2 weeks. So that was the theory behind this. That's why we got all the water up there with a little drop of Clorox in each jug. And then we have full transmitter control from in here, as well as out at the main operating console in the control room out there.
So you could run the radio station from here?
We have an old RCA board in here. It used to be a production board circa 1951.
You could be a disc jockey again, Gary.
Yeah, we've got a few records back here. But
you've got two-way radios here? And
got a ham rig here. It's tied in with the Dawson County EOC and the sheriff's office and the studio, and it's all tied together.
And this all goes back to the original mission of this station when it was put on the air. We need a way to communicate with the farmers.
Right. That was the purpose of the whole thing, and like I said, you know, the main thing is that it's on the air.
So it is really a lifeline. If something happens, from a local county level disaster to a tornado to a national disaster,
you've
got communications capability here to keep this thing running.
Well, Nebraska is a sparsely populated state, particularly in the western and northern part of the state, and those folks up there don't have local radio stations, so they depend on this one. And of course, with the ground conductivity being poor up in the sand hills and everything, it takes a big horse that they can hear.
It's interesting, folks, if you have never heard this station, to listen to their weather forecast, because they're one of the few stations that still covers, what, 5-6 states in every forecast.
Yeah, we do eastern Colorado, Wyoming, Nebraska, Kansas, and once in a while we get into South Dakota, not too much, but it sometimes gets rather involved. The weather forecast could be 5-6 minutes long.
They're also religious about doing station IDs, and if I stood here for another 30 seconds, I could almost point to the time when the station break would come.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that sets you apart from a lot of stations nowadays.
Yeah.
They take pride in their license, which is unusual in this day and age.
So this building has been here since...
They built the south part of the building in 68, and then when the generator was put in, this addition to the building, the bomb shelter and all that was added. Now you notice the kitchen and the little utility room, which is a wash pit and hot water heater, but you'll notice that the high-pressure water tank is fiberglass, not steel. And there is so much RF around here, you set up a process called electrolysis, and it will eat. And we generate enough ozone around here that you can't lay a pair of overboots out here over a year or two and they'll disintegrate. We have the same problem with the motor mounts in the voltage regulators for the MW50 transmitter. About every 4 to 5 years, those rubber pieces inside those motor mounts will disintegrate, and then it wipes out the worm drive. You know,
just from the RF signal being generated
by the
plant.
The rubber damage is from the ozone that's generated here. You got to remember, you're pumping 52,000 watts out to the antenna system, you know.
Now we're in the generator room. You don't want to start this.
Well, it's a little deepening, you know. You're not going to hear anything in the tape, but it's a V12 cat with dual turbos. It was provided by FEMA, Federal Emergency Management, and it was a used generator when they found it. I think it had like 600 hours on it. It was up in the sand hills, and it ran a bunch of center pivots up there for 1 year or 2 years or whatever.
He's talking about irrigation systems.
Yeah, large pivot irrigation system, deep well irrigation. The FEMA provided the generator and the underground fuel tanks. Now, we took one of them out, so we're only down to one tank, underground tank, but there's a 5,000-gallon tank buried here on the north side of the building, north side of the driveway. So this thing is instant start the minute it senses a loss of commercial power, either on three-phase or just a single phase. It will start. We have electric block heaters that feed it all the time.
Do you test it regularly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we normally fire it about once every month or two just to make sure we're...
Gary, I guarantee you there's somebody listening to this tape right now that would love to hear this thing crank over. I'm putting him on the spot, folks. I think he's going to resist.
Well, we could do it, but, I'd rather not.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll take your word for it.
It's a V12 cat, and it makes a lot of noise. Yeah. In fact, you should wear ear protection when you're in here.
I'm sure, yeah.
The floor shakes.
And there you have part one of our tour of the KRVN transmitter site in Lexington, Nebraska. This is Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. We'll be back next month with part two. Meanwhile, I want to join all our other DX Audio Service editors in wishing you a happy new year and best wishes for the start of the true new millennium. Till next time, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. And now let's check out our CBC test calendar. It looks like we have some unusual tests coming up. And courtesy of Patrick Griffith, he met with the Director of Engineering, Jeff Garrett, and Program Director Greg Cassidy from Crawford Broadcasting in Colorado. And they've authorized him to release an official announcement that they're planning on running a simultaneous DX test on all three of their Denver AM radio stations, that is KNUS 710, KRKS 990, and KBJD 1650 during the morning of January 7th. That's a Sunday morning, January 7th, 2001, from 0200 to 0300. Now, the discussions indicated that they'll probably run the day power non-directional antenna during the first half hour of the test, and then the standard night power and night pattern on the second half hour. Programming will include Morse code IDs, unusual music, and other readily identifiable programming. It sounds like the programming will be simulcast on all three stations. They also expressed an interest in live feedback from listeners by telephone and the internet during the event. The web address will be DJ, that's letter D, letter J, at 1650thebeat.com, and the telephone number will be 303-631-2400. 2328 or 303-696-1971. No collect calls, please. The mailing address for reception reports is 3131 South Vaughan Way, that's spelled V-A-U-G-H-N Way, Suite 601, Aurora, Colorado, 80014-3510. Back those to the attention of Greg Cassidy. And finally, if we can get that blowtorch in Brookneal, Virginia to turn off their transmitter for this one, we might have a chance of hearing us back to the west here. Just kidding, Dave. On February the 4th, WILM in Wilmington, Delaware will be testing on a frequency of 1450, and they will be testing from midnight to 0200 Eastern Standard Time. That's WILM 1450 in Wilmington, Delaware, midnight to 0200 Eastern Standard Time on February the 4th. And that is our CPC test calendar for this month, and if you'd like to be a part of our CPC test program, it's very easy to do. We accept donations of stamps and also suggestions. If you'd like to hear a particular station test, why not contact Blaine Thompson here at the National Radio Club, and I'm sure he'd like to hear from you, as well as get some donations of stamps, which help to offset the cost of the program. Now let's flip over to side two with more of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for January 2001.